I'm a grateful and enthusiastic member of the Al-Anon family groups. My name is Richard. And there it is again. Last year, I think I stood up here and I talked about how this is my favorite moment of the year. Because it's a little bit like unwrapping a Christmas present. And I was just sitting down here thinking, it's different this year. I'm coming into this just glad that we got through this week. And yet I get up here and you do that to me. And it's all good. As some of you are aware, we had a bit of a wrinkle this year. We had a kickoff speaker booked, Jerry V from Temecula, California. Very excited about bringing him up here. And then on Sunday, I got a phone call from Jerry, a very serious medical issue had very possibly ended his work career and made it impossible for him to come up and join us, and it was very, very last minute. And so we're scrambling, trying to find a replacement on just a few days' notice. And I found a guy. I first came across Nick listening to a speaker tape where, surprise, surprise, he was stepping in at the last minute to replace a very well-known Al-Anon speaker who couldn't show up for a commitment. And then back in May, Karen and I had the opportunity to participate in the Catalina Island Conference, and I actually got to meet Nick. We got to meet Nick, and we spent the weekend really just falling in love with him and his enthusiasm, watching a guy who is so committed to this thing that we do and so enthusiastic and so passionate about being of service. And when I called him, it was, of course I'll do it. He dropped what he was doing. He took the time off work, and he came here to be of service to us. It's really a great pleasure to have him here, and it's my pleasure to introduce you to my friend Nick.
Hi, my name's Nick, and I'm a very enthusiastic member of Al-Anon, and I paid Richard to say those nice things about me. Thank you, Rich. I gave him a loony and a toonie. It's good times. If you're listening somewhere else, that's their exchange money here. You know, thanks for inviting me out, Richard, and Karen. Thanks. You know, you guys hosting me is phenomenal. I got to have some borscht this evening. Yes, yes. Some of you might know what that is. Now I think I do. I don't know. It's pretty good. Put some pickle juice in it and sour cream. You know, got to sit around the table with a few Al-Anons chatting before the meeting, you know. And I haven't gotten to do that in a long time. It's like a home-cooked dinner with the family. You know, but with our Al-Anon family. And that is a huge gift. You know, that's something that I wouldn't expect to say a while ago. And the way this thing works is exactly what the title of the conference is. The slogan is Together We Can Make It. And that's I find that to be absolutely true. You know, what was talked about how Betty Ann flaked on a commitment, and how, you know, I already talked to her about this, and how, you know, Richard happened to hear that CD that I happened to be on that day, you know, at a men's stag meeting in LA. And then all of a sudden I'm here subbing for somebody else who couldn't make it, you know, another member of Al-Anon. And, you know, that's a gift. If I don't see God in that, then, you know, I'm crazy, because I get to see where my higher power's process is in my life. And that's what Al-Anon's brought me. I'd say the biggest gift Al-Anon has given me is the ability to see where my higher power's hand is in my life. You know, who'd have thought when I stepped in 15 minutes before that speaker CD that it would lead me to be here in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada today? Right? No, I would not. I did not think that. That wasn't ever, you know, I never heard the name Saskatoon, you know, at that time. You know, and I find that to happen all the time. If I don't pay attention to what my higher power has done in my life, then I don't see it. And I'll give you some examples of that as my talk goes on. My home group, I have two of them. It's Friday night, Woodland Hills, Tradition 5. If you're ever in LA and you want to go to a bigger Al-Anon meeting, you're more than welcome. We have about 100 to 120 people. And hopefully when you walk in the door, you'll get somebody to put their hand out and shake your hand and say welcome. You know, because if we don't recognize you in a meeting, you know, you may be new, you may not be, but it's always nice to be welcomed in an Al-Anon meeting. You know, I find that to be so important when I go to any meeting anywhere. And that happened tonight when I walked in the door here. My other home group is my Wednesday night young people's meeting. If you're young or young at heart, you're welcome. It's, you know, we welcome people who either felt young in Al-Anon or like me, I came in through Alateen. And when I left Al-Anon, I had a hard time identifying. You know, I did not relate to people's husbands and wives drinking or their kids. Frankly, I didn't have a husband or a wife at 18 who drank. I didn't have any of those things in my life. So I'd sit in the rooms and I would, frankly, be uncomfortable because I'd hear some things that some people said in meetings. You know, if somebody's drinking or sobriety bothers you, you're in the right place. Well, nobody's drinking or sobriety bothered me. You know, my thinking bothers me. You know, my reaction to alcoholism in my family bothers me. You know, if you have a problem with somebody else's drinking, it's my opinion that you have a problem. You know, it's our reaction to the disease, which is why we're here. You know, it says it in one of our basic text, how Al-Anon works. If you ever wonder how it works, it's a great book to describe it to you. You know, another great book is From Survival to Recovery, two of my favorites in Al-Anon. Those are, you know, sometimes they're not talked about a lot, at least where I'm from. So I guess I'll start at the beginning. I was born on drugs with the umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. My mom was heavy into drug use, and I didn't realize that. I didn't know that till I was 18, that was my birth. I didn't know I was born under complicated circumstances. I did know my whole life I had a hard time in school. I did know my whole life I would try to do my best. I would try to pay attention. I'd raise my hand, ask questions, try to figure out what's going on, and not understand what was going on in school. I didn't understand why. Came to learn later on that I have ADHD. And I also came to learn later on by talking to professionals that the effects of being born under the influence of drugs and a few whatever else was in there can affect your brain chemistry and the way you process information. So I am a born member of Al-Anon. You know, on top of that, you know, if you want to talk about alcohol, I can get into that too. My mom and my dad broke up when I was 4. My dad was a drug dealer. My mom was an addict. Okay, she went to jail. She went to rehab, jail. She hit FBI cars. You know, she did all kinds of stuff. She went to jail, and my dad met a new girl. All right, she was in my preschool. She was a preschool teacher where I went to school. And you know, my dad was alone. It was only him. And he had stopped dealing drugs, and he went on he had a successful business that he was good at doing. So he had a real legit business, but he's always traveling. And he met this new woman who moved in within a matter of I don't know how long. You know, for some reason in school, I remember seeing her first. I don't know why. But I remember seeing her at my school and talking to her, and she's one of the teachers. And the next thing I know, she's living in the house. I don't know how that happened, but it did. So my dad would go away a lot on work because he was in the hairstyling business for people in the entertainment industry. And so he'd be on sets, he'd be doing movies, he'd be gone. And all the while I was left alone with her. Now, during that, when it was me and her was when alcoholism really affected, specifically alcoholism really affected my life. Her parents were alcoholics and she was an untreated Al-Anon. And so what happened for the next 6 years was nothing but physical abuse, violence, mental abuse, coercion, you know, stealing, all kinds of stuff. That, and I went through horrible, horrible abuse. And this was at the hand of an Al-Anon, not an alcoholic. You know, I hear some of us in the rooms talk about alcoholics like they're the, oh my God, the alcoholic did this and the alcoholic did that. And I'm like, really? Okay. What did you do? You know, because I'm not here just because somebody's drinking bothers me. You know, I'm here because of my reaction to alcoholism, the family disease. Because it's a family disease. If you look at our literature, you look at how this thing works, you know, we're all affected in some way, right? So for the next 3 years, basically what happened is that I'd see my mom periodically. And in the meantime, my dad's girlfriend would tell me to manipulate the situation. So we all know about lying, manipulating. You know, I grew up lying about my abuse. She taught me to basically blame it on my mom because she was the obvious target, right? She was in rehab. She was under the influence half the time. So I could basically blame everything that she did on my mom. And I had to go through life blaming my mom for these horrible, horrible things until I was about 11 when my dad broke up with her. And it's interesting because I had to make amends for that later. And that's when the ninth step's beauty came in. And I'll get more into that as to why it's so important. But it really taught me about the importance of how these steps and the way we practice them is paramount. So 11 years old, my dad breaks up with his girlfriend. And we lived in like three or four cities. I spent half my life in the ghetto. I spent another part of my life in a little nice area. So I have an accent like sounding like I'm a hip hop artist. All right, at like 11, I was breakdancing down in Venice at like 5. I cracked my head open. I'm the only white kid in my crew, in places like Los Angeles where there's gangs. You know. Big gangs. I was like, there's Nick. He's just that kid hanging out with us. And I'm like, all right, cool. Because the only thing, see, when you have dysfunction like I do, that kind of family looks attractive. You know, the safety of people who have your back is nice. Because I didn't feel like anybody had my back growing up. And I didn't feel like anybody was there for me. Because I couldn't be honest. I was living in fear. You know, that fear that some of us get and some of us have is so deep. You know, I won't discount anybody's underlying causes and conditions that they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the stuff that affects us in ways that we don't understand. So 11, 12 years old, moves on. I'm living in near the beach in Los Angeles. I'm spending half my time rollerblading, living free. My dad would let me do anything I wanted at that time. So I went from slavery to like freedom. And then my dad decides to move into like the mountains in like this off obscure town where it was a really well-to-do town, and they didn't have a perspective of the outside world that much. So I show up, this hip-hop white kid at 12 years old, in an area where this is at a time before Eminem was cool, like before white rappers were normal. And so I come out and they don't know what to do with me, basically. And I'm, on top of that, I'm a little angry at the time because I'm still lying about my mom's abuse, and I'm still I'm still doing what we do in our disease. You know, when I was 11 years old, my dad gave me $40 on Thanksgiving. I heard you guys just had Thanksgiving, right? Okay, ours is in November. And so I on Thanksgiving Day, my dad gives me $40 with my cousins, and my cousins go, I know what to do with that. Really? Okay, here. So what do? They get me high. 11 years old, Thanksgiving Day, I'm high. You know, and then after that, I always say I used Al-Anonically. You know, it's like, it's what the family did, it's what my friends did, I did. I drank with them, but I didn't have the obsession. I didn't have the obsession of alcohol. I didn't have the allergy that creates the craving that alcoholics talk about. You know, I didn't get that. I didn't relate to that. But I knew that every time, you know, I was around, I was like, okay, let's do this. But I didn't care. So at 15 years old, 4 years later, I figure out I'm allergic to marijuana. And I don't like drinking. That's just annoying. So I don't drink, I don't use. Basically, I'm a sober member of Al-Anon. And I end up at about 12, 13 years old, really angry kid. My dad had gotten a bad car accident. by the time I was 12. And he wrapped his car around a telephone pole, shattered his face, broke his back, broke all the bones in his left leg. And my mom, being of service to him, because she was sober at the time, she was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous by then, was decided to be of service to my dad. And so all of a sudden, my dad's moved back in. I'm confused, all right? I have nothing to do, but for some reason, this frustrating situation of seeing my dad wrapped in bandages, bloody, all the horrible things that come around this, I literally end up, my rage is where my main character defect goes, man. I put holes in walls and break windshields. You know, if you're one of those people, you're my people. You know, that's where the disease is. For me, when I'm, you know, I used to rage, I'd break my mom's windshield in her car, I'd put holes in these things, I'd hit lockers. And I remember, I was powerless over that. You know, that's where I'm powerless. The first step is we're powerless over alcohol, their lives have become manageable. For me, when I'm in that rage, when I'm in that place, I'm completely powerless and my life is unmanageable. That's how the first step works in my life. You know, that's what it means to me. That's a tangible, understandable action that makes my life unmanageable that I can get. You know, that I know. So at that time, that's what I'm doing. I'm getting in fights in school, and my mom says, Nick, there's this program for you. You know, it's called Alateen. And I'd seen the steps at my house because my mom was sober at the time. And I'd see the steps, and I went at 13 years old, and I remember I'm sitting in this room, and there's like a bunch of kids around me, and some of them I partied with on the weekends. Some of them were like the other kids who were also dysfunctional, who were also hanging out together. Because if you grew up in alcoholism, I find from my experience that I would attract the same kids. You know, all my friends were abuse survivors. All my other friends' parents were alcoholics. You know, we all somehow attracted to each other. So next thing I know, I'm sitting in this room, and I'm like, I don't know, I am 13 years old. And I'm sitting there doing one of these. Like, I had my hand barely raised, and I'm like shy, like, oh. And literally this girl sitting next to me who was much bigger than me ended up like raising my hand for me. She was like, all right. I was like, okay. And like, I never stopped talking since. And it was like the first time I knew. See, I go into the meetings, and by that time, in the U.S., we have what's called court-mandated reporters. So what that means is if you talk to this person, you tell them you've been abused or you tell them things happened, they have to go tell the courts, okay? And you get taken away from your family. All kinds of horrible things happen. At least in my head, I thought these were bad things. They're probably good things. But in my head, you know, it's the disease, right? It's a bad thing. So I knew that these rooms didn't have court-mandated reporters at the time. I knew that I felt safe there. I knew that I could talk about the horrible things that had happened in my childhood, and the Alateen sponsors who were in that room were not paid to be there because I was afraid of being used. Shocker, right? And I was already stealing money from my dad's girlfriend for him. So I was afraid of being used. So I go into a room where, just like a regular Al-Anon meeting, nobody wanted anything from me but to be loving, kind, you know, put their hand out, welcome a newcomer, you know, give them a hug. It was like the best thing, and they didn't want anything from me. The tradition said it. It says it somewhere in the traditions that, you know, that's why we're here. We're not here professionally. We're here to be of service. And that was amazing. That just blew my mind. You know, it's the eighth tradition. It's what made it tangible. It's what made me feel welcome here. And so anybody here, Alateen sponsors? Anybody have done it? Everybody ever been one? Thank you, by the way. I just want to thank you because that, you know what, it means the world to me. For this Al-Anon, it means the world. So as time goes on, you know, I start to get a relationship with my father. I start to, you know, my dad is getting better. He's getting healing. My mom is taking care of me, and 15, 16 years old, the best times of my life are like nothing but a bunch of gang fights and nothing but like, you know, friends who were also at a juvenile hall, and, you know, they were also tough guys, and those are like who I looked up to. I was talking with somebody earlier about that. Like, that's what I perceived as like a guy's guy, you know, and so 15, 16 years old, I'm doing that stuff, and I'm still in Alateen, by the way, because Alateens are nuts. I'm just going to tell you that right now. We have our own level of crazy. And, you know, it's definitely something special, right? So I end up, sitting in an Alateen meeting. Anybody have candlelight meetings? Alateens have candlelight meetings. Get a candlelight meeting here if you don't have one. They're amazing. So I'm sitting in a candlelight meeting, and you know, that we I love those meetings to this day. And my mom comes in, and she's crying, and she goes, she pulls me out into the hall, and she goes, "Nick, your dad's dead. He just died of a heart attack 2 hours ago." And I kid you not, in an Alateen meeting in a church, I put about 8 to 10 holes in those church walls in a blackout, complete blackout rage. You know, I had no power. I was powerless at that point. I had no control of my, of what I was doing. And, you know, the Alateen sponsors chasing me out the room. You know, my kids are following me in the back. There's a big, there's a group home there. Kids from a group home were there who were, you know, mandated to go by the courts. And they literally, there's a big, big, huge gangster kid, you know, who's once again a bigger, much person, much bigger than me. And he chases me out the room, and he and I'm like, I'm out. Literally, I'm sitting in this courtyard, just blank. I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't know what to do. So this guy comes up and he hugs me. You know, I don't know if he's hugging me or holding me back. You know, but at that moment, he was a power much greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. You know, he was my second step. He was there. He was, you know, he was hugging me, giving me love. He was doing what we do in the rooms. He wasn't condemning me after I destroyed a church. He wasn't, you know, he was just hugging me. And the way God works is, A, I got to be in an Alateen room, the Alateen meeting, to find that out. Where else would I want to be? Nowhere else but in a room like that. Second, the night before, this was a Wednesday, we had, where my dad lived, he had Taco Tuesday. All right, so guess what we did? We had tacos. We had tacos, we played ping pong, we watched the sunset. You know, me and my father had a day where we were father and son. And before I left, somebody said, you know, "Nick, hug your dad and tell him you love him." You know, if you come from where I come from, we didn't do that. That wasn't something that I did intuitively. You know, that wasn't something that was normal for us. So I hug my dad and I tell him I love him. You know, I had no idea he was going to die the next day. I had no clue. You know, if that's not another process of my higher power showing me where he is, I don't know what it is. Because I got to learn in Al-Anon that he didn't, that I didn't die. He died. He passed away. I'm affected by that. I am affected by that in an extreme way. But you know what? I'm not the one. So I get to sit back. I got to mourn in my own special way. You know, but I got to keep going to Alateen. I didn't stop. You know, there were people there for me. Al-Anons were there for me. Everybody was there for me. You know, and it was the power of the rooms, man. It was the power of the steps. It was the power of how Al-Anon works. You know, it's pretty simple. So by this time, 16, 17, 18, I move schools. I'm not getting as many fights. I'm done with that because I'm now a grown man. I have to, you know, man of the house kind of thing. I take more responsibility. I start speaking like I am now, a little more, a little clearly. It wasn't all slang and things like that, because I was dealing with doctors, attorneys, and stuff like that. My dad, 18 years old, my dad's ashes were stolen from a mortuary by one of his ex-girlfriends, because he dated quality, quality women. You know. But by the way, my first girlfriend from like fourth grade is out there on like drugs, meth right now. So I didn't have much of a better picker. But anyways, so fourth grade. Yeah, no. Right? So anyways, so what happens is, you know, instead of burning down her house or getting some like my homies to go do something, I got an attorney. It's a much better thing to do. I got, you know, I got the ashes back through the courts. I did things appropriately, and I got to be a good example of how Al-Anon works by taking care of myself. You know, in the promises it says we will stand for ourselves but not against our fellows. I live by that. That is like my mantra, you know, because how many times do I want to knock you down for touching me or for slighting me or for looking at me funny? You know, I want to do something to get you back, to get back at you, to make myself feel better. You know, but I don't get to do that today. You know, I get to stand up for myself, but not against you, my fellows. And that is huge for me. That's a gift. And one example of that was, I forget to say this sometimes, at my dad's memorial, my dad's girlfriend was there, the one who abused me for about 6 years, 7 years, or whatever it was. And she pulled me to the back room and she said, Nick, you know, why don't you like me? What I ever do to you? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. By the way, I have cancer and I need money. And she was basically doing the disease. She's doing what we do in our disease, manipulating, you know, trying to get what we want. Because that happens sometimes in the disease when people pass away. It's really crazy. So I literally looked at her. And the best I could do as an Alateen, 16 years old, after my history and telling her what I did, was I literally looked at her and said, you know, if I told you what you did to me, I would do it to you. And I have more respect for my father than that. And I walked out. That's all I did. Kept my side of the street clean. You know, my heart was huge. I mean, it was crazy. I was just completely, ugh. But you know what? I got to be a man of dignity and respect, you know, at 16 years old. So life goes on. 22, I'm still crazy, by the way. I'm getting better with you, okay? But my personal behavior is insane. Okay, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't control my impulses. If it looks at the 20 questions in From Survival to Recovery, ask questions like, do you have problems with your own compulsive behavior? Do you have fear of authority figures? Do you stay in relationships without fear of being alone? Do you think parental drinking has bothered you? Whatever. It has all kinds of stuff in there for personal recovery that we deal with on our personal basis in Al-Anon. And so I was dealing with that the whole time. Attention seeking, you know, food, sex, rage, you know, anything to distract myself. My sponsor always reminds me, I suffer from the disease of distraction. Besides having moderately severe ADHD, I also will do anything to get out of a feeling, you know, and that's what I had to deal with. So at 22, I didn't have a sponsor that I was personally honest with that I felt like I could tell everything to, because I had some problems with trust, you know. And at 18 years old, my yearbook said, in my yearbook quote, this is like the great quote for you to leave and go into the world. It was like, in this life full of stress and strife, trust no one but yourself. I was trusting and, yeah, an idiot. I couldn't trust myself. I couldn't trust the disease that was in my head, you know, but I thought so because I didn't know anything better. Right? So at 22, I made this amazing decision and I want to be of service in another way. And I decided to go into the U.S. Air Force. And at 22, I go into the military and, you know, I'm rigorously honest still, by the way. You know, I became rigorously honest. I didn't like lying because when you lie like I did, as deep as I did, it hurts after a while. I mean, it hurts on a level that is just so deep. You know, when I lie, I almost want to throw up. I mean, it's just that bad, you know, which is a good thing in my opinion. I get to be a rigorously honest program. So I tell him I had surgery when I was younger, and I did. I had 3 surgeries in my right arm. So I'm in there, and a few things happened. One, I couldn't salute right even because my arm doesn't have full mobility, my right arm, just a little bit off. And then on top of that, there were some actions by drill sergeants. I don't know if anybody here has been in the military. I'm sure here in Canada you have drill sergeants and things like that. They brought me back to my childhood, dealing with the yelling, dealing with the threats, and dealing with all that stuff. And I was like, it shell-shocked me, you know. So they said, okay, we shouldn't have let you in after 30 days and sent me home with a shaved head and combat boots and a cool pair of pants. And that's it. And I went home and had my U.S. Air Force shirt and showed up at my mom's doorstep like that. My Air Force bag, my boots, shaved head. And, hi, Mom, I'm home. You know, I was such a failure. You know, that's where I went. My mind was like, I was a failure. You know, I was not good enough. In the reading it says we're not good enough, smart enough, attractive enough to solve this problem for the one we love. I've learned through my recovery that the one I'm supposed to love is myself, you know, and through in my own head, due to my own thinking, I can't fix that myself. My head doesn't do that very well. So I have to be together with you. You know, that's how the fellowship works. That's why we have sponsors. So at 22, I'm out hiking with a gal and her boyfriend, and he's 69 years old, okay? He could out-hike me, all right? I remember I told him about my dad's ashes, and he was like, well, what if those really weren't his ashes that you got back? He's like, what if those are empty box? Like, you're an asshole. And I was talking to Richard about this earlier. I'm like, if you don't hate your sponsor at least once in your recovery, then you're probably not doing it right. If you don't hate your sponsor at least once, I hate my sponsor right now. He's making me do some work. God, doesn't he know who I am? I'm speaking to Canada. I love him, though. I talked to him before I came. And, you know, Richard was like, I tell my sponsor when I hate him. And so I did it. That's what I get to do today. You know, so I got to do that today, literally. So he ends up becoming my sponsor. Now, this guy is a former Army interrogator in Vietnam who's been through combat, done. You know, he said he's been to every 12-step program with an A after it, and Al-Anon was his home. I was like, oh, that's my sponsor right there, you know, because I get that. You know, I get that. I get the issues. You know, I always thought men, for me, I always thought men were like alcoholic men, tough guys, rode Harleys, you know, do all these things. And I was looking at a man who's the most loving person I've ever met. You know, granted, you can see right through me, and he had the eye, like, 1,000-yard stare. But, you know, he was a loving guy, loving, kind, respectful, gentle, humorous. You know, and I was like, wow, this is another side of a man. You know, men in recovery in Al-Anon are different, you know, because I came from gangs and drugs and violence. You know, now I get to be that guy. You know, I get to be that cheesy, smiling, hey, welcome to Al-Anon. Glad you're here. Hug, you know, shed a tear sometimes. I don't care. You know, I don't care. What you think of me is none of my business. You know, that's another one I've learned. So I go through him, I go through the steps. I had my first step. I had an example of how my first step works. And, I had a hard time with the second step. And I said, okay, well, came to believe that power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I didn't get that. Restore me to what? If you're born under the circumstances I was born under, what does restoration look like? How do you get restored from when you're born in insanity? I didn't get that. So he broke it down for me. He said, restoration takes work. You know, we do. When you have a cabinet you want to restore, you got to like polish it, sand it down, take off the gunk, you know, to see the beauty under what's under all the gunk, you know. And he said, you know, that's how it works here. Came to believe that power to grow myself could restore me to sanity. It takes some work. And, you know, and restore me to that perfect little loving Nick that God intended me to be. And I was like, oh, I'm perfect, you know. And I still take that to the day. I'm perfect. You know, and I'll tell you why, because all of us have character defects. Most of us, right? That's a perfect score. Maybe Richard doesn't, but you know, we all have character defects. We all have issues that we work with. All of us have our four steps, our inventories. All of us have our stuff. That's a perfect score. That's 100 out of 100. Right? So I'm just like you. I'm no different. I'm one of us and we all have it. So I was like, okay, I could do that. All right, I'm going to accept myself. I get to do this. You know, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God. So, okay, so I got to do that. And what that meant is I'm willing to do anything my sponsor said. You know, I'm willing to do anything. Read the books, do the writing, make a gratitude list every day. You know, I would scribble my whole life story in a journal. And that it was almost illegible. I don't know how he read it. But when he started sponsoring me, he couldn't understand half of what I said. Actually, most people couldn't understand half of what I said. Because when you have ADHD like I do, you can't keep up with your thinking. Your head races so fast, it was full of ums, you know what I mean? And full of just trying to make filler, and I couldn't keep up with myself. So I hoard this fourth step that's just a bunch of, oh God, stuff that I can't tell you from the podium, of course, stuff I can only talk about with my sponsor, stuff that I thought I'd go to the grave with, that I was the only special snowflake that ever did anything like that, you know, and I thought no man in Al-Anon could sponsor me, don't you know who I am, and, you know, I met this guy who did that. I got to do my four step, and I got to do an honest one, and I got to share everything with this guy. I did my fist up, you know, and I got to really trust. It was an act of faith at that time. When I did my third step, turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand God, I had to then be willing to do 4, 5, and 6, and 7 with no questions, no reservations. And now, mind you, this is coming from a guy who knew nothing but lying. His whole, you know, my whole juvenile adult, I knew nothing but lying. And that's what I did, is lie really well. So I was rigorously honest with this guy. I did everything. So he sits down and he talks to me. And I tell him about all these horrible things I did and I'm still doing. And he just looked at me and he was like, you know, I get that. And by the way, I did X, Y, Z. And I was like, dude, you're sick. You know, you're like me. Great. I'm not so alone. You know, there's one more man in Al-Anon who knows me. You know, another guy in Al-Anon knows about me. And I didn't think I could do that, because I thought if I told a guy here in Al-Anon what I did, he was going to beat me or kick me out or tell me to leave. Because, you know, and what's hard about being in Al-Anon, and maybe some of you might relate to this, is that I did everything on my four-step sober. You know, I listened to alcoholics and talk about what they talk about and all the hijinks they did. And they'd go out to crazy, get in fights and end up in here and not know what happened. And I just told you I did all that sober. Completely. You know, I drank a little bit, but nothing bad happened. So all these things I did that were sober, and that puzzled me. I was like, oh, God, I am sick. You know, and I was. I was sick from the disease of alcoholism, the family disease of alcoholism. So I get to go into 6 and 7. Now, the way 6 and 7 worked for me, an example, is the speech pattern I told you about. I didn't know that was happening, by the way. Okay? So I'm here thinking I'm carrying this great message of recovery that half of you may understand. And I didn't know that. So a loving woman sat down with me, my first friend in Al-Anon, who's an alcoholic. She sat down with me and said, Nick, I love you. But I can't understand half of what you say. And I was like, really? You know, and I just started crying. I just started crying because she was the first person who ever openly accepted me and loved me besides my sponsor. You know, because I counted my worth on you. Still happens sometimes, depending on how cute she is. But, you know, I counted all my worth on her. You know, that's what I did. And you know what, though? It was a gift. Because when she told me that, I got to go to my sponsor and go, is this true? He goes, yes. All right. So he sit down and he would count how many ums and you know what I means were in my speech. Just talking to him. Sitting down, trying to figure things out. He would tell me, Nick, this is you. And then what's interesting is that, you know, when I asked God to remove these shortcomings, and I did 7, I got to be willing to do some more work. So I took a speech class to help me. I had listened to my CD, and I've listened to my CD, some of the old ones. And once again, I'm getting stuck in my thoughts. I couldn't follow them. The fact that I could stand before you and you understand me is like a miracle to me, because I listened to myself at the time and it was horrible. And that's how this stuff works for me. It's about the actions we take. For me, it's about the actions. It's about the willingness. You know, when I did my 8-step, when I made that list of people I'd, you know, harmed, it kind of came out in my 4-step. It came out in those horrible scribbles I was telling you about. We looked at it, and we had to look at what I had done to my mom. You know, I had to take an honest look at the effects I had on my mom. So my mom was gone, right? And the abuse happened. But I carried the abuse onto her. You know, by 13, 14, 15, 18, 19, I was violent. I was telling you, putting holes in walls, breaking windshields. So I was doing that to her car, her house. I was cussing at her. I wasn't calling her mom. I called her by her first name. I didn't tell her I loved her. All right. I was not being a good son. I was not even being a good example of Al-Anon. I was just being mean. You know, because I was afraid to let go of that power I had. You know, that power. I was afraid to let go of the truth that she didn't hurt me. You know, that's shame. I was ashamed of myself. And I didn't want her to hurt me with that. But my sponsor at that time, we sat down and said, okay, this is how it's going to work. This is how we're going to do your amends with your mom. And this is how it happened. One random day, she's sitting in her room. And I got to go up to her. And I sat down with her in her room. And I said, Mom, I got to tell you something. I love you. And every time I was mean to you, every time I hurt you, every time I cussed at you, I was lying. Because I love you. If I didn't tell you I love you, I was lying. And I know, by the way, I know you didn't abuse me. I lied about that, and I'm sorry. And I know it caused you a lot of pain, and I know a lot happened. And I'm going to treat you with respect and dignity from now on. I love you. And by the way, I'm also going to call you mom. Because you want to be called mom, I'll call you mom. Well, the one thing I left out was, by the way, while you were gone, you know, all these horrible things happened by my dad's girlfriend, and, you know, XYZ happened. Because the ninth step says, you know, made amends to these people, except when to do so would injure them or others. She felt bad enough for not being there already. She was already, you know, she felt guilty, and I knew it. That was something I knew in my heart. So I didn't get to do that. You know, I didn't get to blame my actions on somebody else. I got to have to take personal responsibility for my actions. So when I did that ninth step, I didn't get to do that, except when to do so would injure them or others. So I didn't get to injure her with that. I had to take full personal responsibility for my actions. You know, and that was hard to do. That was really hard to do, because if you're like me, it's everybody else's fault. You know, my favorite slogan is, you know, when all else fails, blame somebody else. You know, it's like, yeah, it was them. You know, now people, I say that and people know I'm full of it, but you know, it's like that was like the key I learned in the ninth step. And, you know, I continue to take personal inventory. When I'm wrong, promptly admit it. You know, so I do that today to the best of my ability. Sometimes it takes longer. Sometimes it's shorter. But, you know, it happens. And what's great is I am fully aware now. Sometimes I feel like I'm too aware. Because I'm like, oh, I have to go back and do this. Because I can't hold on to those things. I can't live with that stuff. It doesn't work anymore. Those old tools I had that kept myself safe and protected as a kid don't work. So I have to have all these new tools, and I have to practice these new actions and this new faith. I did my 11th step throughout the prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with my higher power. Paraphrasing. And, you know, that led me to my spiritual practice today, you know, which is a huge gift. I may not have the same higher power as you have, and that's okay. You know, I had a problem with God when I came in here. I really did. I didn't like the word God. I didn't like a lot of things. And my sponsor gave me a good acronym for God. Now, if you go to AA, you might have heard Group of Drunks, G-O-D. Some people say good orderly direction. My sponsor gave me goodness on demand. Then any given situation, when I'm struggling and I'm in fear and I'm looking for something to get my life better, you know, if I'm praying to a God of my understanding, hopefully I'm looking for the goodness in that situation. You know, goodness on demand. You know, and everybody has, you know, TV on demand. We order a movie, it's right there. You know, same thing. God. On demand. You know, I get to sit down. I have no fear. I get to come to Canada, Saskatoon, you know, and hang out and be with God. You know, because on demand, God says, Nick, you're going to Canada. You know, and that's how it works for me. The 12th step is, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, which come to fruition in little steps here and there. My sponsor always says, you know, these character defects and all these scenes go away a teaspoon at a time. Just a little bit, you know, like, and I'm like, ugh. So I have to keep, that's why I hate my sponsor today, because he made me realize something, a character defect I have to work on, you know, teaspoon at a time. So they're not all gone yet, but they're getting better. So when I carry this message to others, you know, I get to do it as a gift to myself and from you. Because I sit here and I see my friends. I really do. We're all members of Al-Anon, Alcoholics Anonymous. We all have our secrets, right? Hopefully. We all sit here and we all get what – we all relate on some level. You know, we all relate. Because at first I came here trying to be different from you, you know, because I didn't understand your wife or your husband's drinking. I didn't understand your kids drinking. You know, I didn't get that. That now, though, I get a little more. You know, now that, like, my life's more in order, sometimes I catch myself, like – wanting to fix something that somebody else is drinking, you know, but there's a difference. I get to be of service today if they ask for help. which I've done, for alcoholics. If they want to go to a meeting, we can go. You know, my friends are getting sober. I get to go to a meeting with them. You know, we get to do those things. The big part for me is, you know, we practice these principles in all of our affairs. That's the one thing I always hear missing sometimes when we talk about the 12th step. You know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others, and we practice these principles in all of our affairs. It doesn't say not on outside issues. It doesn't say, you know, accept when to do so, whatever. It says we carry these messages, you know, we practice principles in all of our affairs. So what that does for me is it gives me permission to go back to step one and to practice step one on all my affairs if I need to. You know, I get to use it as a tool in my life to help me live a better life, happy, joyous, and free. You know, because that's the goal for me. My sponsor reminded me today, you know, my goal is to have a spiritual awakening, to live a spiritual life, to be happy, joyous, and free. My relationships may not look like yours, you know, but if I'm making my actions based on spiritual principles and I'm okay with myself, then I'm okay. You know, my higher power has a plan for me, and often I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I didn't know I was going to be here tonight. By the way, the thing, you know, together we can make it. At work, everybody knows I'm an Al-Anon, all right? This is just me, though, but everybody knows I'm an Al-Anon. So what happens? I go into the office, and I said, hey, guys, I got to ask to speak in Canada. It's my first time ever flying out anywhere to speak, by the way. And, you know, they go, okay, so you're going to Canada, huh? Like, I guess so. You know, they reworked the schedule. My coworker, who's a normie, who went to me on an Indian reservation where I got to carry the message on an Indian reservation in Arizona, you know, where they need it. You know, they need Al-Anon like we need it here. You know, I got to carry the message onto a native soil, land, you know, do a workshop. My normie coworker came with me. You know, we got to off-road on Indian land, sacred Indian land. He's jealous to this day. But, you know, when that happened, he said, you know what, I'll work for you on Saturday. Together we can make it. He's a normie. You know, he's being of service to you guys with me. You know, so I get to thank him from the podium for doing that. You know, for being of service, to know how important this program is in my life. And we get to do this together, and that's a gift. You know, if there is not a higher power for me, those processes, those actions that happen in my life show me there's a loving God in my life if I look for it. You know, so if you don't have a higher power tonight, if you're new, if this stuff, you know, if this doesn't sound right, try other meetings. There's a lot of other meetings. And you'll relate to somebody, maybe somebody else, you know. But if you don't have a God, you could borrow mine. You know, it's an opportunity to look for the goodness in any situation. And if you can't do that, work it out with somebody else, and it may happen for you. Thank you for letting me be of service.